racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Welcome back to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. Except this week, a little bit different. I'm sure many of you have that fine wine that you have down in the cellar when it's a special occasion. You kind of bring one of those bottles out. Well, that's what we're doing. We're bringing out Alex Maselli, the founder and publisher of Morning Read. Thanks for doing this, Alex. Good to have you back in the grill room.
I had to sweep up all the dust on me from being in the... Being up on the shelf for so long.
Well, I've heard it said many a time, we'd like to dust them off. But anyway, it's 5 weeks into the new season. Any compelling thought that comes to mind when you think of what's transpired thus far?
Well, I think if you're not, generally, I think if you're not under 30, you got a problem on the PGA Tour. Because you see obviously it's the time of year where a lot of these guys that are have just gotten their card or have only had their card for a couple of years are playing in these events. But that being said, they're the ones that are showing up. They're the ones that are winning. You know, obviously we've had some different guys in there, but the bottom line is that guys that we don't know that well are winning golf tournaments. And it's not just the guys winning, it's the leaderboards. The leaderboards are full of guys that, again, we don't know very well. So I would say right now, after 5 weeks of the 2019-2020 season, I would say it's a transition, which we've seen in the past, from older to younger.
Yeah, it certainly appears that way, and it seems to be no end in sight. I mean, every week they just keep coming. Let me get your thoughts on this, Alex. What about Ricky Fowler going to the Sergio Garcia 2-week training period on how to win a major?
The thing, obviously, hasn't won a major. But if Ricky Fowler doesn't know what to do on a golf course to win a tournament, and I'm just saying tournament because majors are just like everything else. There's 72 holes. We put a lot more prominence on them. But the bottom line is there's 72 holes. It's a golf tournament. If Ricky Fowler doesn't know how to win a golf tournament by now, I don't think 2 weeks anywhere is going to make a difference.
Well, I should have been a little more specific. I thought you would pick up on it, but then I remember who I'm dealing with here.
That's right.
What I was talking about was Sergio Garcia. When it almost seemed certain he was not going to win a major, turned to an unusual method of getting the job done. He walks down the aisle and gets married and, boom, wins the Masters. Now, Ricky Fowler, 2 weeks ago, now he's a married man. Is it going to help?
You know, you do have to be more specific, Bob. I understand, you know, we have a lot of time, but still, you know, I mean, I'm you know, I just came off the shelf and dusted off the, you know, all the – anyways, no. I don't think it makes a difference. I don't really know how to explain a Ricky Fowler. I don't know how to explain a Charles Howell, because Charles Howell came out of college golf with as much adulation and interest as Ricky Fowler did. And actually, you could say the same thing for Patrick Cantlay, but he's got an excuse. He had issues regards to health and back issues. But both, do you take Charles Howell? I mean, how do you explain Charles Howell? How do you explain that he, you know, he couldn't get it done? How do you explain, and I always go back to this, how do you explain Brad Elder? You can't. You know, Nicklaus Award winner, you know, unbelievable talent coming out of college, and nothing. So Ricky Fowler certainly hasn't fallen into that scheme. But Ricky Fowler, I don't know if he has a swing, even though he's been working with Butch for a long time. I don't know if he has a repeatable or a good enough swing, under pressure in the situations which you've talked about, which are the four majors. I just don't know if he has that. And I think so far he's shown that he doesn't.
You know, it's amazing that only 4 years, you just alluded to. So the number of opportunities aren't great. And it doesn't take too many bounces not to go your way, and then you're suddenly camping out with Colin Montgomery and Luke Donald and Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood, all guys that you would have thought for sure would have gotten into the major winner's circle at least one time in their career.
Well, I mean, I think Colin Montgomery is a great example. He had his chances, playoffs, you know, obviously in the U.S. Open. But if I look back at Colin Montgomery in the end, it's he did not have what it took. And I say that because I saw his last great chance at winning a major, which was at Wingfoot, and standing in the middle of the 18th fairway with a 7-iron or 6-iron in his hand and couldn't get it done. And that's all he had to do. All he had to do was find the green with a 7. Well, I think it was a 6-iron. Find the green with a 6-iron, 2-putt, and it was over.
Yeah.
And he could not. And he could not find the green, and ended up. You know, I don't even know what he shot. I don't know if it was a 5. He made a 5 or 6. I think he made a 5. But the point is that, you know, when you have those opportunities in the middle of the fairway, which is someplace that Phil Mickelson could not find the entire day on Sunday at Wingfoot. When you have those opportunities, you have to take them. And Colin Montgomery had to know that that was probably going to be one of his last best opportunities. You know, I look at Lee Westwood at the 18th hole at Muirfield, and I say he didn't do anything different than anybody else did. He hit the shot he thought he should hit. I mean, you saw Tom Watson come in then later, and he did the same thing, get over that green. It was just one of those things where they just didn't judge it very well from the fairway on 18. So I understand that from Lee Westwood. Colin Montgomery had no excuses.
Well, let me shed a little more light on that Colin Montgomery situation. I happened to be doing play-by-play. I was standing no more than 20 feet from Colin Montgomery when he was in the fairway, and you're correct, he did have a 6-iron in his hand, but there was a little bit of delay because of what was going on with Phil Mickelson, and still Colin stood there with that 6-iron in his hand, and then when it came time to play, almost like a reflex action, he went and put the 6-iron back in the bag, pulled the 7-iron, hit the shot, comes up short, and as you said, just does not go on to win. He did need the 6-iron. He was convinced it was a 6-iron, but the moment of truth came, and he did not deliver. Let's move on to one other thing that, well, I'm dying to get your impression on this, because I've heard so many different approaches concerning slow play on the PGA Tour. And the haunting question that keeps coming up to me, and I'm going to ask you this, Alex Maselli, is it any benefit to the PGA Tour if they play faster?
Well, I mean, there's an argument to be made that it would be, right? I mean, you can certainly make the argument that fast is better, but for who? I mean, on television, they schedule the time. They know how long it's going to take. They're so good at it. They've been doing it for so long. They cut up shots, so that's not a problem. You're not sitting there as a fan watching the guy and waiting for the guy to take the shot. So generally, as a fan on television, you have no issues. If you're a fan at the golf course, most of those people will walk around a couple holes and then they'll go find some place to go get a beer or get a hot dog or sit somewhere else and watch it. Nobody's going out there and watching for 18 holes. And the people in the stands are in the stands. That's what they do. They just sit in the stands and they enjoy the day. So again, I don't think it really affects them at all. I actually think it hurts. It can hurt the PGA Tour, as I've said earlier, maybe on the show, and I think I have, it could hurt PGA Tour in regards to gambling, because you like that dead air, that little time between shots, so that people can make bets. That's why golf is maybe one of the best sports in regards to making bets. And you know, it was funny because I think I've said this before too. Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, went to Manafort, of the commissioner of the Major League Baseball, because he was so adamant about we need to speed the game up. And Silver said, you know, he called him and said, look, this may not be the best thing for you. Speeding the game up may not be the best thing for you, because now all of a sudden people can bet on balls and strikes and what's going to happen, where if you're speeding the game up, you don't have any time. And I know it sounds crazy, but at the end of the day, gambling is going to be a huge thing in sports in the United States. And so you don't want to take anything away from the opportunity for someone to make a bet.
Well, you're right on so many fronts there, Alex. And you know, there has to be a logical conclusion why nothing's been done about slow play. I mean, what, they gave out a penalty 20 years ago or something like that. And when no action is taken, but nobody is harmed by the lack of action, it kind of explains the fact that there is no action taken. I can't see it being a benefit to the tour. I certainly concur with you on the sentiments about betting on this. The more time a player takes over a shot, the more time somebody's going to have to tap on their phone, whether he's going to hit the green or miss the green. So I would say, based on that, probably in the near future, or maybe far into the future, we're not really going to see anything directed towards speeding up play on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, you know, and I haven't heard anybody on the, if I've heard anything from the PGA Tour about this, I've heard from the rules officials who have said, you know, especially Thursday, Friday, there's just too many people on the golf course. We can't do much to speed play up. And I've heard, you know, obviously Brooks Koepka, you've heard Rory McIlroy say that, we need to speed play up. That's because they like to play fast. And I understand that. But, you know, back in the day, I mean, first of all, Tiger, who is arguably one of the best players in the world and is ever, doesn't play fast. Jack Nicklaus didn't play fast. There are numerous great players that didn't play fast. So, and what happens is you have to adjust. As a player, you have to adjust to the situations. Brooks Koepka and Rory McIlroy have had to adjust to the situations. And quite honestly, it doesn't seem to have harmed them at all.
Well, that's for sure. Let's move on, because we had an event on the PGA Tour, Alex. The Houston Open, a story in itself. You know, Shell dropped out as the sponsor. The Houston Golf Association was involved. The event really was in peril. And along comes, the Houston Astros to salvage it. They're going to be taking it down to Memorial Park next year, which I think is going to be an unbelievable location for the event. Jim Crane, the billionaire who happens to own also the Floridian down in Florida, is the backbone behind this. But out of the Houston Open comes the story of Lanto Griffin. And for those listeners that may have not been made aware of what transpired, he's a 31-year-old. He lost his father when he was 12. And I have been, and you have been too, Alex, a staunch supporter of club professionals. I think they're the backbone of golf. They work long hours. They don't get a lot of credit, but they have a lot of passion for what they do. And the pro at Lanto Griffin's club, when his father died at 12, the club pro took him under his wing, told him, look, you're never going to have to pay to play here. You're never going to have to pay for lessons. And that's just a shining example of a club pro doing the right thing and promoting the game of golf. And actually, at one point, it's hard to believe, Lanto Griffin was down to his last $176, but he turns things around, wins $1,350,000 at the Houston Open. To me, that's quite a story.
Well, I mean, it is, considering the fact that if you look at what he's done to get there, I mean, he played in the PGA Tour of China. He played PGA Tour Latino America. He played on the Korn Ferry Tour. So he's played on every tour, I mean, all the way down. And he's won. He didn't win on China, but he won on the other two before getting in the PGA Tour. But what I thought was interesting is, if you were someone that was really looking at someone that had a good chance the week of Houston, if you looked at Lanto Griffin coming in, he'd played in 4 weeks in a row, and he hadn't finished outside the top 20. So you looked at that and you're saying, well, here's a kid that either A, at 31, I guess I call a kid, either A, he's peaking, or he's not, but you're giving him the benefit of the doubt there, aren't you, Bob? At that point, you're giving him the benefit of the doubt that, you know, he's playing so well, he's on a run, so let's see what happens. Now, you don't necessarily expect him to win, but you expect him to play well.
Yeah, he certainly did that, and this is what he had to say right after that victory.
Well, it's my first top 10 too. So, out there, I was just trying to get in my own zone, which I did a really good job of early in the round. And, man, I guess I'm in the players now. Century Tournament of Champions, Masters, FedEx Cup playoffs. It's incredible. It was really strange out there today. I was actually battling my own mind how calm I was and how big of a moment it was for me, but I wasn't nervous, and I was almost trying to tell myself you should be nervous. And I think I talked myself into being nervous on a few putts on the back nine, but tee to green was, you know, it was pretty darn good for me under pressure. So this is going to be a week that I'll never forget, regardless of what happens the rest of my career. I feel very fortunate beyond words. So thank you to Houston.
Well, we've heard a lot of players say a lot of different things after securing a victory, especially their first victory. But I, for one, have never heard anybody say that they were trying to talk themselves into getting nervous, figuring that would help them win. Have you ever heard anything like that before?
No. But I mean, obviously, it's an evolutionary thing, trying to learn how to win on the PGA Tour. And for someone like that who actually says that he wasn't nervous, I mean, that's what you aspire to. You aspire to not be nervous. Some guys will say, well, I have a little jitters at the beginning and that got me kind of focused. But if you're nervous and you can just play your game, which is what he clearly did, that bodes well for him down the road when he gets into another situation like this. And that's the thing, trying to get in those situations. I mean, when you get a chance to win on the PGA Tour, you got to take it. Because I remember talking to Jeff Maggard, a someone from Houston, and he talked about the fact that when you really run the numbers, you only get 5 or 6 legitimate chances to get yourself in a position to win on the PGA Tour, depending on who you are. I mean, if you're Tiger, it's more. And if you're someone like Jeff, it's less. But the bottom line is, you know, you're going to get those chances, you know, 3, 4, 5, whatever they are. You need to take advantage of those. You may not win every one, but you need to take advantage of those, because that makes the difference between you keeping your card and being in the FedEx Cup playoffs and getting to Atlanta and not.
Well, with victory comes another set of problems. Lanto has to set some new goals for himself, and this is what he had to say along those lines.
Well, the first one is win. So, second one's keep card. 3s make 70% of my cuts. 3 top 10s, playing 2 of the 4 majors. Final group on Sunday. Knocked that out today.
So, he accomplished quite a bit. Those actually were the goals that he had set coming into the week of Houston. And it seemed like check this box, check that box. He did pretty good job checking those boxes off.
Yeah, and as you know, Bobby, it is so hard. It doesn't matter what tournament it is. It is so hard to win on the PGA Tour. And you talk to any one of those first-time winners like Lanto Griffin, and he will tell you that, because he's been through – I mean, what's his record? It's 1 win and X losses, basically. And that's the toughest part about golf, is that you're playing – sometimes you're playing not to win. You're just playing because you want to get a better position, but you're not going to win. And, you know, the realization that, you know, you're not winning, and you can play a whole year of professional golf and not win. You know, it sounds like that means you've been a failure, but you haven't been, because that's just the way golf is. You could finish, you know, 15 times in the top 10, and you'd be, at least from a financial standpoint, be in great shape. But again, that means you've lost every tournament you entered.
Yeah, and you'd be amazed to, and I think I would too, of the total number of players that have played on the PGA Tour and never, ever tasted victory even once. So congratulations to Lanto Griffin. Congratulations also to a mutual friend of ours, Alex Maselli, Butch Harmon. He was the honoree of the Houston Open. He actually was a staple here in Houston for almost 20 years before he moved to Las Vegas. His dad was heavily involved in Houston. His brother, Dickie, who we both knew very well, passed away at 57. Many people don't realize, but Butch's dad, Claude, he did win the Masters in 1948, passed away at 73 years old. But a great honoree for the Houston Open, Butch Harmon.
Yeah, absolutely. And people may remember, that's where Tiger used to come when he was working with Butch, when he was still in high school and college. That's where he came. He came to Houston to work. So, yeah, Butch is Butch and Charlie Epps are the two guys that I think of from Houston.
All right, we're going to take a short break right here. And when we come back, the tour moves overseas to the Far East. That's where Alex and I will be going.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Bob Upke here with Alex Maselli, who's sitting in for Jay Randolph Jr. A lot of people know Jay as STL Golf Geek. Let's go to the Far East now, the CJ Cup. Lots to talk about, but I have to believe some comments coming from Brooks Koepka. He didn't really consider Rory McIlroy a rival at all, right, Alex?
No, I mean, Rory's number two, Brooks is number one, and there were some comments out of the CJ Cup in South Korea today. Let me just read a couple to you, Bob, which I think are hilarious. So the first one, when discussing the rivalry between the two, or perceived rivalry between the two, Koepka said, "I've been out here for, what, 5 years? Rory hasn't won a major since I've been on the PGA Tour, so I just don't view it as a rivalry," he told it was AFP he told that to. And then in turn, he went on to say, "I'm not looking at anybody behind me," said Koepka. "I'm number one in the world. I've got open road in front of me. I'm not looking in the rearview mirror, so I don't see it as a rivalry."
Well, if there wasn't before those comments, certainly stoking some of those coals, Rory McIlroy will try and answer big time, but boy, that's easier said than done than Brooks Koepka. All right, he is the defending champion. Rather interesting that not only is Brooks in the field, but brother Chase is in the field. I wonder if a request was made by Brooks about, it's a long way to go to the CJ Cup, but it'd be a lot easier if I could bring my brother along.
Well, I know, Bob, the stuff that happens behind the scenes. And if you want to have the number one player in the world playing in Korea, then sometimes you have to make a little deal. So I'm sure something was said or done, which I have no problem with. I mean, if you're trying to make the field better, if you're trying to bring the talented players to your fans in your country, then you got to do what you got to do.
Have you any insight whatsoever as to what Jordan Spieth has been doing for the last couple of months, and any predictions on how well he's going to do at the CJ Cup?
Well, no predictions on how well he's going to do at the CJ Cup, because as you've said, none of us know exactly what's been going on. So I think we just have to kind of wait and see. I have no idea what he's been doing, but I think it's pretty clear that he just needed to get away from golf for a while and kind of like clear his head, which is totally understandable in regards to how this thing works out here. I mean, back in the day, the tournament started, basically the PGA Tour started when you teed it up at Doral, even though there were events before that. And it ended, pretty much after the PGA Championship. Now it's 24/7, 365. I mean, they're playing all over the world. So if you're a Jordan Spieth, if you're a Brooks Koepka, if you're whoever, you have to schedule a lot better. And I think scheduling kind of got away from some of these guys, especially last year with the way that the majors had changed. And now we got this year coming up with the way we have the Olympics in there. So scheduling is a huge thing now. I mean, a much bigger problem than it was back in the day of Jack Nicklaus or Tom Watson or even Greg Norman.
Alex Maselli joining us this week. Certainly Danny Willett wins the Masters a couple of years ago, goes dark for a couple of years, reports of some injuries and lack of confidence, rebounds with that big win at Wentworth. Dandy Willett certainly validating that that Masters victory was not as far out in left field as people were led to believe.
You know, and what was funny is the discussion was, especially by the Europeans, is that you shouldn't be surprised that Dandy Willett won this major because of what he had done before this. Then he wins the Masters. Now we're talking about how, you know, he fell off the rails, and now back to validation of, you know, showing that what he did at the Masters wasn't a fluke. And at some point you have to say, well, maybe Dandy Willett just isn't a fluke. I mean, maybe Dandy Willett has shown enough, but obviously the injuries and other things that have happened over that period of time, he had a couple of kids, you know, things happen, life happens, and to all these guys. And so when you were asking me about Ricky Fowler, do I think that being married is going to make a difference? I don't know. What if he has a kid or two? Will life happen? Will life change for Ricky Fowler? Will it make it more difficult for him to major? Well, in Dandy Willett's case, obviously what's happened to him since winning the Masters has made it a little more difficult for him to go ahead and pursue what he wanted to pursue going forward. But now I think, you know, he's old enough and he's understanding what the situation is. And now you see Dandy Willett playing to the level that you expected Dandy Willett to play at when he after he won the Masters.
Another name that's in the field and certainly an interesting character, to say the least. I'm talking about Kevin Na. I had an opportunity to be speaking with Sean Foley not too long ago, and actually we were talking about Cameron Champ. But Foley had this to say. He said that if Kevin Na drove the ball like Cameron Champ drives it, Kevin Na would win 15 events in a row on the PGA Tour.
Well, I'm not sure I could go with 15 events in a row, but I don't disagree with him that Kevin Na has got some great game. And, you know, obviously everybody has issues that are the things that they have to work on. And in Kevin's case, it's driving. But, you know, Kevin Na, to me, and I said this earlier, I think a couple weeks ago after the win in Vegas, he is definitely a guy that if you're Tiger Woods, you have to be looking at for the President's Cup. Because quite honestly, who is not on that team that would be better than Kevin Na right now?
Yeah, that's a good point. And certainly with his putting prowess, he's the guy you would like to have playing in a team event. It's going to be a big year for our reigning U.S. Open champion, Alex Gary Woodland. Got the job done out at Pebble. Had some family pleasures since winning that Open. And now embarking on a new year. What do you anticipate from Gary Woodland in 2020?
Well, I think that there's an understanding that you are going to probably mentally take some time off if you're somebody like Gary Woodland. I know Rory McIlroy doesn't. I know that Tiger Woods doesn't. But Gary Woodland is not Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods. Gary Woodland's a very good player, obviously. But you know, mentally, he took some time off. His wife was having, I can't remember if it was twins or triplets, for gosh sakes. But the bottom line is that you have, again, life happens. And so I think, you know, Gary Woodland, after the win of the U.S. Open, took 2 or 3 months to kind of adjust to all that. Now he'll come back around, you'll get through the Christmas holiday, and when I expect to see him in January, I expect to see a Gary Woodland that's ready to go. And I think that you'll see a Gary Woodland not only ready to go, but I think that he's going to be a guy that will contend in some of these events. I don't know about a Masters, because I don't know if his game fits the Masters as well as it will fit some of the other venues that we're going to play next year. But I think there's no question in my mind that Gary Woodland will contend at majors going forward.
Let me ask you this, Alex. What chances does a player that's playing here in the CJ Cup, but certainly be playing down at the Masters and has an opportunity to slip on a green jacket with the longest hair ever? Of course, I'm talking about Tommy Fleetwood. To me, he just seems destined to win a big one. He's got everything that it takes. Obviously, to win any major, you need a couple of breaks going your way. But I think Tommy Fleetwood's a future superstar.
Well, I agree with that. I think the question is like this year, I'd have to say that Tommy didn't have his best year compared to the previous year. But again, you know, got married, had a kid, kind of adjusting. And, you know, I think the guys that are playing on both tours have even more adjustment to do, because there's the push and pull of playing in Europe and playing in the United States. And you have to put together such a precise schedule to be able to do all of that. It makes it very difficult. So I think those are, again, scheduling is a big thing that, in the case of Tommy Fleetwood, he was experiencing, getting to figure out, getting to understand, you know, how to do it with everything that's going on. But I don't disagree with you. Tommy Fleetwood showed to me, I think, when he was at Shinnecock last year, I think that showed you that he clearly had the game to win a major championship. And now it just comes down to, you know, having a decent week and having some of that luck that you talked about, because you cannot win a major championship without luck.
One other name I want to put the Alex Maselli lens on. He's going to try playing on both tours, the PGA Tour and the European Tour. A wealth of talent, as far as I'm concerned. Victor Hovland seems to have everything.
Well, I think, you know, you can put him in with some of the other guys that we've been talking about. And, you know, what's odd about Victor Hovland to me, Bob, and maybe you can weigh in on this. I didn't know much about Victor Hovland when he won the U.S. Amateur. And, you know, being at Oklahoma State, there's a lot of good players. And certainly he played well at Oklahoma State, and, you know, and showed a lot in college golf. But, you know, just like Cole Hammer in Houston last week, you see these guys show up on the PGA Tour or the European Tour, and all of a sudden they are just like lights out. And I don't know how you judge that. I really don't know how you look at a guy that's playing in college golf and, you know, is having a decent career, but there's other guys on this team, as we know, on the Oklahoma State team, that were just as good. And then all of a sudden they get out here and they're just world beaters. And I think Hovland is going to be one of those guys, because he seems to have, he's kind of like, you know, in baseball they call a five-tool player. He seems to be like the five-tool player of golf. He seems to have everything. And there's nothing that I would say he has to absolutely work on. Like Cameron Champ, I could tell you his short game still needs work. But Victor Hovland is not a guy that you say that particular part of his game needs work. It's amazing.
Well, that sets up a perfect segue. If you're planning on working on your game, you're going to want to listen to my next interview. It's with Pete Charleston, president of Golf Logics, and how the Puttline app that they now have available can not only make you a better putter, but it's going to speed up play. Back with Pete Charleston when we return.
You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, and we're heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker Alexa and you'll be connected.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Well, we got him back in the grill room because he's going to give us some information that can help you play a little bit better golf, and everybody likes that. His name is Pete Charleston. He's the president of Golf Logics, and their tagline, and I've been looking at this for a couple of hours, Pete, play smarter. And I love it, because if you play smarter, that means you play better. If you play better, that means you play faster. And slow play, certainly the plague of golf at the moment. And with your equipment, you're taking a big step forward to eliminating that. Thanks for joining us and sharing with us the excitement of Golf Logics and exactly what it is and how does it work, Pete?
Well, we were the first company to create an app for golf. And way back in mid-2009, when the first smartphones came out with GPS, we jumped on the opportunity and, you know, had a basic GPS app, and as we do at Golf Logics, we add new things and features and more ways for you to play better, smarter golf each year. So we've added a whole bunch of new things here in the last year or two.
So basically, I'm standing in the middle of the fairway. I got a shot to a green. With your app, I'm going to be able to ascertain the exact distance that I'm away from the flag?
Yeah, so it really actually starts on the tee box. You actually get distance to any of the bunkers, the layups, the all the different things on the tee box, and as you walk or drive down the fairway, you get the access to a view of the green on your approach shot that shows you really the different green contours that are on the green, and shows. Does the green slope front to back or right to left, or it really helps you play smarter and plan your approach shot. And then when you walk or drive up to the green, then you get this really detailed green information on the way your putt will break. So it's really an all-inclusive app.
Pretty amazing, Pete. What you're describing to me is exactly what a top-notch caddy would be supplying his player with.
That's exactly it. And most people don't have the opportunity to play with a caddy ever, or if they do, it's really on a limited basis. And it really is an unfair advantage, to have someone standing with you on the tee box and saying, tap me on the shoulder, better not hit drivers. See that bunker out there? Or, on the approach shot, hey, okay, did you notice the green? If you go with this pin and you miss and it goes back left, you get a double bogey here. So aim for the center of the green, hey, you're putting and, they're with confidence. They're telling you this putt goes from right to left and it's slightly uphill. And when you have that kind of confidence, like the tour players or the people with caddies get, it changes the way you play golf.
You're listening to Pete Charleston, the president of Golf Logics. Something new, as I understand it, Pete, Puttline. What is that?
Well, Puttline is something we created after watching the tour pros, over the last, started really about 5 years ago. We started seeing these guys break out these books and, doing a lot of research, we figured out that they were using green contours to help read and confirm their putts. And, we went about the process of creating a way for, amateurs to get this same information, really at the press of a button. So Puttline is a migration of something we originally created called Putt Breaks, which showed you what the green looked like with respect to the contours. And then we took it a step further based on our member feedback. And now you simply walk up to the green, stand behind your ball. You basically draw a line from where you're standing to where the flag is. And then it actually zooms in and gives you a putt read. So it teaches you how to putt and will tell you aim 12 inches left and aim, 6 inches short. And if you hit that putt, the ball will go in the hole. So it's really amazing technology.
That is amazing. And am I correct in saying that it works in conjunction with the Apple Watch?
It does. Yeah. So, with respect to the on the green putting, you do have to take your phone up to the green because of you need that bigger screen to be able to draw the line. However, a trick to make it easier and faster is once you draw the line to be ready golf, you go up there, you draw your line, you get your read. You can put your phone away, on the ground or in your pocket, and then if you lift your wrist and you have your Apple Watch on, that same read that it gave you on the screen will be on your watch. So it'll remind you right before you putt, like a good caddy saying, okay, Pete, I want you to aim 12 inches left and like 6 inches short. And that's the last thought you have before you putt, and it'll change the way you putt.
Well, it's no surprise then that you have over 4 million golfers that have downloaded this Golf Logic on their smartphones. Can I ask you how many golf courses are available?
So with our basic GPS distance, so we give you a free trial, by the way, 2 rounds to try out all of our features. But even with our free version, we have over 36,000 courses available worldwide. We give you 3D images of each hole. And we allow 4-player scoring, and we give you distance to the center of the green. So really valuable information. And then with respect to this new green data, this putt line, we have about 13,500 courses done and available for our members here in the U.S. So we're going as fast as we can and trying to get everyone's course done.
Is it a subscription-based app?
Yes. So we offer, again, that we're so confident in our app that we give you a 2-round free trial, no strings attached. And then if you like it, great. It's $49.99 a year, and you get unlimited access to all the different courses around the world. And then, as I said, there's really no risk to your listeners. If they choose not to, to upgrade to our premium product, then they still get access to the 3D imagery of the whole distance to the center of the green and four-player scoring.
Well, you have to be awfully pleased with the positive feedback that's coming in from golfers of all level. It seems like one of the major side benefits, Pete, is that it is going to speed up the pace of play.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. At first, people were saying, oh, great technology, this is going to slow the pace of play. But I would make the argument that I think where many people take the longest, and you do see it on the PGA Tour, is on the putting green. And specifically with amateurs, and I'm one of these people that this just, I didn't grow up playing golf. I started a little later, so I don't know how to read greens that well. So quite often I'm looking to the left, looking to the right. Sometimes I'm walking behind the hole and then I plumb bob and I'm like, I hate the fact that it takes me so long. But, you know, with GolfLogix and Pugline, you literally step up with a swipe of a finger. It's giving you this read and you can confidently putt the ball knowing that you're at least aiming on the right side of the hole. And you're going to end up with so many less three putts. And you know, even that alone is going to help speed play.
Yeah, less three putts lower on that scorecard. Pete Charleston, president of GolfLogix, we thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to share this amazing information with our golfers. Want to play a little smarter? You want to play a little better? Pete Charleston certainly has the answer for you. Best way to get more information, what would it be? Just go to GolfLogix.com?
Yeah, you can go to GolfLogix.com, and that's L-O-G-I-X.com, or you can go right into your iOS app on your phone, your Apple App Store, and download it there for free, or you can go to the Android Play Store and also download it for free.
Many thanks to Pete Charleston from GolfLogix. If we can just help one golfer play better, it'll be mission accomplished. And as always, when it's involving Alex Maselli, the time runs quick through that hourglass. Many thanks to Alex Maselli for joining us on this special edition of In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay.